So 20 years ago, when we were all young, there was no keynote and PowerPoint and so on. For nostalgic reasons, I decided I keep this tradition now. So, by the way, this very funny coincidence, the last time I was here in Frankfurt was end of 96, I think, and it was again about web objects. I was interviewed for, just after the university, I was interviewed here in Frankfurt, and then I started my career around the world. So now, again, for web objects, it's quite a funny coincidence. By the way, Marcus told something very funny, that this feels like a class gathering after 30 years. So the last time I was in a conference where the average age is above 40 was many, well, I don't remember having been there. Anyway, I will talk about, as Tom said, I will talk about what we are doing with web objects, because we're one of the few, I think, that still actively do some development in web objects. And as somebody says, it's like a girlfriend, it's kind of, you don't want to throw it away. I got an email one day, I think in October, from Jean-Marie Houlon, an email to me and Dave Coyle, another of the old guard web developers, directly a zipped file, and was web object 7.1, and to play with, because at the time we were at EMBL.
So 0.7.
So, I started my current company project that we had. I started in 99 as a trainer, and then in 2002, 2003, I started also having employees and starting writing again web objects projects. Since then, we accumulated, just before I came here, I made a line count, and we accumulated in active or maintained projects about 2 million lines of source code. And from these 2 million lines, I think about 1.3 million are written for web objects. So in my company, we are between different times, between 5 and 15 people. From them, about a third are in operations, and the rest are developers. So what type of clients we had? Luckily, we were quite successful with these projects, and we had very different clients. We had clients in government, education, and finance, and at the moment, the most active are still in finance. Also in Germany here, there are a few places where they use web objects in finance. But for government, we have here in Germany two, in Justice Department in Baden-Württemberg, and in the Education Department of Lower Saxony. And these are the second one is a relatively new project. In education, we have with the University of Göttingen, University of Texas, SALT, that is the South Africa Large Telescope, and these are the astronomical projects that I will talk a little bit about one of them. And then we have with Princeton University about publishing mathematical publications, and with NASA about storing and archiving the rovers archives, the Mars rovers archives. So, and for the finance, I'm very happy to have here the Danish guys, because we have one of the projects, the active projects. This is the Vodafone UK, which is the bookkeeping of Vodafone UK, and still working in front base. And we have also projects like Visa cards in the Netherlands, and now the project that I will talk a little bit later. So, first about the astronomy, I will talk about two projects, the astronomical projects and the final finance project. the Strunov. I chosen them because these are typical large projects currently developed with different technology, including also web objects. And probably they're interesting for you as a base, as a foundation, how you can move after after launch, how we can move away from the current version of web objects and how to move them away. So first I will start with the astronomy project. And the astronomy project, we got the, I think it was about 2006 or so, we got the contract to make the first fully robotic observatory control system. That was at the time the first in the world. It came by the University of Göttingen and the Crook Foundation here in Germany. And so what is a observatory? Observatory, a robotic observatory, is basically a building with a dome. You have a big telescope inside. The telescope has all kinds of instruments, like filters, cameras, and so on and so on. It has a big rack with computers. It has weather stations, cameras, screens, and all kinds of stuff. And we had to move it, to make this one fully robotic. So what were the goals of the projects? The goals were first the schools, because it was funded by the Crook Foundation. The goals were the first the schools to use part of the time as direct observation, so they can basically go on the web and move the telescope and say, I move this, I move that. By the way, one of the most beautiful moments of my life was when in a school in Dortmund here they found an exoplanet. I think 12 years old students without knowing of their teacher and so on. That was fantastic. Anyway, then for the astronomers, they have a fully robotic mode, automated robotic mode, automated observation. Something blows something in the sky, and you have to very like gamma ray burst or supernova, and you have to very quickly move the telescope to watch it. This is fully automated, and then there is a single image, deep sky image, like you make a spectroscopy of a star and something like this. And you have a multi-part observations, like you're taking the curves of variable stars, or you're looking for magnetars, or you're looking for the coordinates of an asteroid and so on. And then you have networking facilities where you exchange observation time, observation facilities between different observatories. So to make such a large project, we needed some guiding principles. And the guiding principles were actually at the end turned out to be very similar to the Isaac Asimov's laws of robotics. So the first one was do not kill the astronomer. Because we have installation of this software in several observatories, one in Texas, one in South Africa, in Germany, and these are 11-ton devices. So if they move, and they move very quickly, they move with 30 degrees a second. So if they move and you're around, you're two-dimensional astronomers afterwards. So the first principle, do not kill the astronomer. Then the second principle, do not kill the telescope. And then the third principle, do not kill the science. And because with inactivity, do not kill the science, that means make observations. So in the observatory, it is again, and we will come in the second part in this afternoon again, people tend to think in kind of biological similarities. So we were thinking also like the nerve system in a human body. You have first, in the first level, you had everywhere in observatory cue button, big red cue button. So if something starts moving when you're in observatory, you just can press the cue button so that everything stops. So then you have, and this fulfills the first principle. The second principle is forget all the computers and so on. You have to protect very expensive hardware, the telescope. So we have shortcuts between weather station and the dome, or between the power supply and the dome. So if one of the, if it starts raining or get humid or power supply is cut, the first thing is all the power that is left in the UPS is to close the dome, and then we will see what happens. And then the third one is obviously the observation itself. And there are also several layers of software that do the observation. You have control layers where you talk to the cameras and control the telescopes and find the coordinates and so on. Then you have the local robotic mode, that means you have a list of observations that we have to do in the, this night, and you have to walk over this list, and then you have the networking stuff where astronomers from different universities submit observations, and some of the telescope pick the observations, or there is a global scheduler that says, okay, because this project has 120 photographs, 7 of them go here and the rest goes in this observatory and so on. So it's obviously not everything here is written in Objective-C. In Java, in web objects, we had some assembler. We had quite a few C code for writing the controllers, the weather controller, the UPS, some of the telescope controllers, and so on. We have quite a lot Objective-C. The scheduler, it's a daemon written in Objective-C, and it talks. Many daemons talk to a kind of brains that is written in web objects and with direct actions. I don't have to explain here easily, though not in direct action. So it talks to the brain, so to say, to the direct action and ask, what, give me what next, what I did this, what next, I did this, what next, and so on. Right? And then you have also the central server, so to say. It's also web objects written that is sits in Göttingen, the university, and coordinates all the telescopes, all the network of telescopes around the world. And also we have a web objects application as a client for the kids to move to in a web to move the telescope, to point it, to make the photographs and so on. And we have all kinds of loggers, analyzers and so on that are also kind of client applications that also written in the web objects to analyze the data, to make the to prepare the pipeline. Astronomical pipeline is quite complicated thing. You have to combine many, often hundreds of images to make one of these beautiful images that you see for posters and for screensavers. So this is one of the projects, and if there is time and questions, I can explain all details about it. This was astonishing. This was actually reused in a big Siderostat, in the largest in Germany Siderostat, the solar telescope. Later on, with almost no changes. So this gave us a lot of hope that the world will pick up and we will start installing this system. But it turned out the astronomers are worse than politicians, so everyone had want its own kingdom, Stardom. So unfortunately that entire idea to share observation around the world and so on kind of died out after a maximum, which peak about 2011. Then Google came to the scene, they donated a few telescopes and the entire project died. So as Google normally does. The second project, this is a financial project in Holland, still active, actually very active at the moment. It's called eServices, and what it's all about. In Holland is a very strange country. I don't know if there are Dutch people here. Okay. Holland is a very strange country. From one side, it's a very social, very socialistic. From the other side, it's ultra-capitalistic. And this also reflects the legislation in Holland. So in Holland, by law, we have that there is no paper anymore. You cannot receive invoice, you cannot receive tax formula, anything by paper. It's forbidden. Even when you're the only police is allowed to print, nothing counts. No companies, nothing. So from the other side, they seem that if they make something so drastic, they have to make it very easy for everyone. So this means that as the early ages of the internet, where you had to have a certificate to log into your bank and so on, it's not possible to explain it for a 19-year-old lady. No way. So they had to make it very simple. And in Holland also, the privacy is also extremely important. So very few institutions have the right to know anything about you, especially to know your signature and your personal data. So the only, outside the government, the only institution that can own your signature, this is the bank, because Dutch are capitalists. So the bank, the banks have the ability to give you, to provide signature to any other party, but they don't have your data, they don't know who are you and so on. And so there is a third party that receives a certificate that can combine, make it like a hub between the banks, between end users, and between the companies that provide some services like telephone bills and so on. So in this way, we are building at the moment in Holland a system with several services. These are, one is payment service, like you're paying your bills, and you're paying them directly to the bank, but you use our system to receive the invoice, and then connect to the bank to pay the bill, the information is sent back to the issuer of the invoice. We have something similar for the e-mandate. Mandate in German, this is a direct, when they collect the money automatically from your bank. Then we have identity services that are very, very important. Identity is like, are you older than 18 years? Stupid question, but you have to answer this one. What is your address? What is your telephone number? And also, through the banks, you can log into different institutions. You can log into the tax office, you can log into the justice department, and so on and so on. And then we have at the moment, these are all the working services built with web objects. And we have now at the moment development of IBAN check, VAT check, and document signing. And these are the first services that I will talk later that are, we're already moving away with web objects, but we still want to keep them in the same umbrella, with the same, they behave the same way as the current web object developments. And obviously this system is quite complex, so that we have many inputs. These are batching ports for like 10,000 invoices in one batch file, or REST services where people just transaction by transaction keep it our site. We have CSV, obviously. World still like CSV, we have apps and so on, and the same is also true for the imports. So these are the two systems that at the moment we currently develop, and I'll be happy to answer questions there.
We have 2 minutes for questions, yes. But I think there is one detail that you did not mention, but it might be interesting. When did you start development of e-services? Because I think that's pretty new.
E-services started, yes, e-services started 2014.
Okay, so that's a new web object project you started in 2014, and you now try to move fragments away from that. Okay, questions?
So how does the licensing work with the viewer, since you can't buy web objects
anymore? It's free. The moment is free.
We've had someone interested in buying our company, for example, but we have this web object in the back end in question, you know, for the lawyers and...
Apple told it it's free. I mean, you can download it. Still, there is somewhere in the Apple site.
Okay.
So, I'm not saying the company, but, I mean, it depends on the price, of course, but... It's free, really free.
Didn't Apple acknowledge that we can just use it?
Exactly, for free. Mm-hmm. It's not anymore the 50,000 license.
But, I mean, you can't, can you deploy it, though? I mean,
Yes.
So when Apple acknowledged that, where did they do it? I mean, is there a record of that?
Yes.
Okay.
There was a K article there somewhere.
Or article.
Yeah.
Are these just backend systems, or do they offer a front end, or do they generate front end?
We have mostly it's a backend. For the front, we have some front end, but this is more administration for front end. Mm-hmm. Like for instance, for the viewers to look at their transactions, to look for a transaction, to download the report, and so on.
Okay.
But the idea is that actually most of the stuff in the future. At the moment, they still want to have many things in the web, but in the future, we are moving to the apps, and they will be basically this will be backend for our apps.
Mobile apps.
Yeah.
Okay, so time is up. That's fine. Perfect.